To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hello, my name is Don Moore, and you're listening to Two Dimension, the comic book podcast with no direction. Sitting across from me is a man that once said, "The only field of thought worth pursuing is
comic books."
You know it. And that can only be said by
Al Val.
And, believe it or not, on my right is the physical properties that control the known universe. And that can only be
It's Rook. How's everybody doing?
This is the first time it's just been the three of us without Dallas. We've done a show with me, Rook, in Dallas. We've done shows with me, Al in Dallas. There's been Rook, Dallas, and Al. Never me. Never the three of us. So,
it's a new combination.
It's a power trio.
Yeah, so it only took 143 episodes for this to happen.
It was inevitable.
But as Dallas said the last episode, him and his wife are expecting.
And maybe inspecting too.
Yeah, they're changing everything around. So I don't think you're going to get to hear Dallas as often as you have in the past. So, but I hope we'll be hearing more of Rook.
hopefully.
Oh, yeah. So right. Comic books.
So we were teasing Rook about it. So this will be a Rook-centric show since he's got a lot to say. But then you said you didn't. You just want to talk. But you brought something up that I wasn't aware of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not really a comic book, but it's definitely something I'm surprised you guys haven't heard about. My wife and I got Kindles for Christmas.
Yeah.
And we've been playing a lot with them and everything. And I downloaded a book called X-Heroes by Peter Kleins. And I got to tell you, this is a really cool book. It's a zombie apocalypse book. So here we go with my zombie again. But it's a zombie apocalypse book, but it's also about superheroes. It's what the superheroes are doing during the zombie apocalypse.
Okay.
More specifically, there's this particular group of heroes. A lot of the book, in my opinion, kind of centers around the particular guy, the dragon, or St. George. He's really, to me, kind of the central character of the whole series, but there's a lot of other characters, Stealth, Gorgon. They're all trying to survive in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, with the zombie apocalypse happening. It's really a neat book. It takes superheroes that, you don't know, but you know the general kind of idea of some of these characters, and throws them into this particular genre and how they survive. This particular group finds themselves held up inside of one of the movie studios, and they're fighting against a gang, actually, like an LA gang that's rose up during this series of events and taking control of a particular area. Madness ensues, of course.
So this book, the person who wrote it creates new superheroes?
He creates all new superheroes.
Well, what a novel concept that is.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Why can't they do that in the real comic book world?
Oh, good Lord, you know. Now this is a book series. I've just read the first one, which is called X-Heroes. The next one, I believe, is called X-Patriots. And so on and so on. And the X is EX-Heroes.
Not
X, like as an X-Men. Yeah. But what's fun is he actually gives you the backstory of each of these heroes before he goes in. So it kind of jumps around in time. It starts you in one area and then jumps to the present. It jumps back and forth in the timeline of things so that you get the understanding of who these characters are, how they got their powers, why they're acting the way they are, how they came about as a group to try and save humanity.
Are they patterned after archetypal style superheroes?
Absolutely. You can see, the Stealth character, she's kind of patterned after the Bruce Wayne, Batman-esque character. You can see Gorgon in many ways is he's kind of like an energy vampire, but he's almost like Cyclops-esque from the X-Men. Saint George or the Dragon, he's an interesting one. He breathes fire. He's invulnerable. He can not fly, but more like glide. He can do like these super jumps and glide on air. So, you know, there are some, of course, very familiar characters in this book that we're looking at, but definitely something different done with them.
Oh, okay. So, this is one of the series? There's more of
them? This is the first book in the series. I don't know exactly how many there are in the series. I think there's like four or five, maybe even more than that now. But very enjoyable. Very, very good read. I really dug it. You know, it was something that popped up on Amazon. Like, oh, you might like this, because I kept searching like comic books and, you know, different stuff that, you know, that we are interested in, that we talk about all the time here. Mm-hmm. And this particular novel popped up. From what I'm looking at, there's five other books in the series: Expatriates, Excommunication, Expurgatory, and Exile. So,
because these aren't add-on physical copies.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, they are. They are. Oh, they are.
Yeah, interestingly enough, went to what was it? Barnes? I think it was Barnes and Nobles. After doing some after Christmas shopping, picked up a lot of interesting books. Actually, if you guys look right behind Al,
I saw those.
Yeah, really leather-bound nice editions. I found the physical copies of these books as well. Yeah, I found those at the bookstore. Leather-bound editions, the entire H.P. Lovecraft collected edition, classic horror, The Divine Comedy, and Nikola Tesla. Not like a novel about him, but his actual research.
Really?
Wow. It's his research, his study notes, his ramblings.
Those look nice.
And of course, George Orwell.
Oh, of course. Well, interestingly enough, the Orwells got picked up because I was talking to the kid about music, and about one of his songs references 1984. I can't remember what song he was listening to, but of course, anyone who is of any kind of literary consumption has read 1984.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
do you remember?
It's horrifying.
Down again. Do they still teach it in school?
Frighteningly not.
Exactly.
That's why I bought it.
Exactly. They used to give it to you in school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know?
I never read it in school.
Oh,
I knew
used to
of
give it.
It
to us,
and my teachers, you know, knew of it. And I didn't read it till my daughter was small. I just went to the library and checked the book out. And it freaked me out. And yeah, unfortunately, what you're saying, some of it is, it's going too far.
But we got 1984. We could have read Animal Farm, but the other one that was, you remember, given to kids, but we didn't get, was Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah.
I've never read that one.
He's had to read To Kill a Mockingbird. He's had to read Romeo
one.
And Juliet.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting because I talk to other people who have kids in high school, and their kids aren't reading these books, you know.
No.
Of course, as we sit here in my library, you know.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I've got a vast array of science fiction and horror, and you know, just all kinds of different books. So, to me, literature is the biggest thing you can do.
Yes.
The greatest thing you can do for anyone. So for him to not be reading this book in high school, I felt I had, frighteningly enough, I don't know how, I didn't have a copy in my collection. So I had to go out and pick up a copy of it.
Yeah.
So,
well, they have places called libraries, which are fantastic. And you can get all the books.
Yeah, but you only borrow them. See, I like to...
keep.
I go to the library and I check the books out, and if there's one I really like, then I'd find a copy of it. You know, but I would just always go. And then if it's a really thick book and you're busy, you can always call the library and say, can I keep this? You know, you can get two free extensions. Great place to go.
I haven't been to a library since the 20th century.
Really?
Well, shame on you, Al.
I haven't been to the library in so long. It's not fun.
I love going to the library.
People should know that the library is a lot different than what it used to be as well. Yeah. You can actually get comic books.
Yes.
Graphic novels. Yeah. Music, movies,
and I'm talking like brand new release movies, stuff that just went out into the stores, along with, I guess, apparently some video games. Some libraries are now having video games. And, you know, the interesting thing with the Kindle is that there are some apps available where you can borrow books, electronic books from libraries.
Wow, I didn't know that one either.
And depending on what app you get involved with and how you work it, you can end up borrowing books from all over the world. So it's really neat, I got to tell you. I'm starting to kind of fall into line with Dallas on this electronic thing, you know, with the, you know.
Well, here's a kind of a whole all-encompassing, you know, question. Since everything is so connected now with the internet and the computer, what happens if, like, something happens to the internet? Is this whole society just going to, like...
You know, interestingly enough, I remember from my childhood a movie. I cannot...
Was it Colossus the Forbin Project? Was it the one about the computers that were ruling the world or whatever?
No. This woman kept coming back in time to try and save humanity because somewhere everything was digitized. Everything was taken off paper and 100% digitized, and a storm came through and wiped all the computer memory. And so they had nothing. They were able to create a time portal and were coming back in time to try and restore the history of humanity because they had lost so much of it. Yeah. I don't remember the movie at all.
You know, a friend of mine's always said this all the time, and it starts off with the religious thing, because when Constantine created the Catholic Church, one thing he did was there was a lot of different versions of the Bible.
What issue was that in?
but not that Constantine.
Oh, different Constantine, one. Okay.
Not that Constantine.
He was the Roman Emperor, but he was basically the one that reunited all the different kingdoms back into Rome after it came apart.
Yeah.
But he saw Jesus Christ on the horizon when he won the battle, so he declared he was a Christian, made Christianity the official Roman religion, and told everybody that they're now Christians. And, of course, the early church was going, I don't know about this. But anyway, one problem he had was there wasn't just one version of the Bible. There was a lot of different versions, as there is with anything. So he had a group go through all the Bibles, decide which one is the right one and which wasn't, and they had massive book burnings. And then, you know, my friend goes on about that, and he's talking. He wasn't a religious person, but what he talked about was they started burning a lot of books besides just books of the Bible, and a lot of things were lost. And he always brings up, and this is true, if you have something written down, you don't really keep in your head so much. You keep certain things that are important to you, but you write it down, well, I've got it here, I don't need to remember it. What was that, Fahrenheit 451, the Ray Bradbury story?
Yeah. Yep.
But, you know, that's why those old stories, even the Old Testament stories in the Bible, it was always an oral tradition. You know, people told and retold and refined. But, you know, people remembered a lot more. If you have it written down, you don't have to worry about it. And so you can say the same thing. You got all the books in the library. The library burns down. You're screwed anyway.
Yeah, so, well, but it's probably like a lot easier. Well, not, it's probably like... It's like you said, like an asteroid or something boxed by that could do something, as opposed to like having to physically burning every library in the country. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And that's the thing is, if you have them, we bring this up all the time. I don't like to buy electronic copies of anything. But I do buy books. I still buy CDs. I buy DVDs, which I have a fear in the next few years you're not going to see this anymore.
No.
But when I buy it, I like to get a physical copy. And that way, if something happens, I've got a backup, you know.
Oddly enough, I was reading yesterday that I'm pretty sure about this, but I could be wrong, but I got the impression from what I read. That's the thing about reading something or hearing something and then reinterpreting it. Sometimes there's there's a little interpretation loss. Supposedly, like, vinyl outsold, like, CDs and other media in the music industry last year. And it's not like vinyl was, you know, that...
There you go. Vinyl collection right there.
There you go, yeah.
I mean, now this is not anything that is new. this is all old vinyl that I hunt.
Exactly, thrift stores and stuff like that. But vinyl's outselling, so people are buying hard copies of things now.
Yeah, well, and I think in a world where so much has become electronic, there's a loss of physicality to things. There's a loss, you know. And look, I understand that, you know, in order for a band to get out there, get their music out there, it's much easier to do it, you know, with SoundCloud, with Spotify,
YouTube,
with Facebook, YouTube. You know, I get it. But there's something to be said about holding that physical CD in your hand with that artwork, with that, you know, time involved in figuring out how exactly do we want each panel of this to look, how do we want the CD to look, you know. There's something lost in electronics, you know, where it almost feels very kind of Ghost in the Machine-esque.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not as connective, in my opinion.
To me, it's just another way of getting the information out, but the preferred way is to have a physical copy of it. For whatever reason, obviously, stuff happens, you know what I mean? But it's another way. The good thing about, like, stuff like digital stuff is there's the amount of stuff that we've been able to get that we could never see before or afford before or have before.
Well, absolutely. Well, and that's kind of like what you guys were talking about in the one show, the Lost Bela Lugosi film.
Yeah,
You know,
you listen to that?
Yeah, I actually listened to a couple episodes, guys.
Oh,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah,
right. The old silent movies.
Yeah, you know, these things are being found, and, you know, where before it would have taken like months or years for anybody to realize that they had been found, they're being found and they're being spread on mass quantities because of the internet, you know? It's a way to get it out there and get it, you know, for everybody to know about. But yet there's just a loss of connection, if you ask me. There's something about having that physical piece in your hand.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tool. Yeah, you know, that's the way I say it. It's not the be-all or end-all. It's just a tool. You can use that for something. You can have a physical copy for something else and then try to make the best of both worlds.
Well, that kind of goes back to those books you're talking about. My daughter pointed out that Barnes & Noble had all those leather-bound books of, like, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was talking about how beautiful they are. And that's the thing. It's something to hold in your hands. I think a lot of the books we used to buy, like you get at the drugstore or supermarket, you know, the cheap paperbacks here and there, those may be going away compared to the Kindle editions or, you know, iPad editions, but there's still other kind of books like that that are there because it's nice to have something you really like.
I mean, Kindle is good and YouTube is good if you can't get a record deal or you can't get a book deal. You can do your book, put it on Kindle. I guess you can get it somehow or another. You can do it on your own and get it published in one form or another, get it on Amazon having an editor or a company reject it, and then see what happens.
Well, take a look at the book Metro 2033. Okay, here's a guy. It's a Russian book. Okay, it's about the apocalypse and everything, and how this Russian population survives in the metro tunnels. It is hugely popular online. Matter of fact, I think you can even get a free copy of it from the writer's website.
Wow.
So if you Google Metro 2033, I think he's got like a free PDF copy that you can get, and it spawned an entire genre of fan fiction about the Metro, about Metro 2033, 2034, you know, and so the internet has become this great tool in getting that concept out there for him, and it's actually very difficult to find a physical copy. Every time I go to an actual bookstore, which they seem so few and far between.
Yeah, I know. That's sad. That's another sad thing, too.
I look for a copy of Metro 2033. Now, like I said, this is a Russian book. It's written in Russian, translated to English. To find an actual copy is very difficult. I actually had a guy tell me one time, you should probably just order it on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know? And
That's the other thing, too. It's like, it used to be, you used to go to bookstores to hunt or record stores to hunt. Now it's like, if you can find them, you're at the mercy. But you go to Amazon, and, you know, if you, if you want to pay the piper, then, you know, there you go.
Well, it, you know, and I know you're a big, you know, opponent. I mean, I'm not opponent. You're big on the hunt.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think the hunt is
Me
what
too.
Makes this...
The chase.
Makes this hobby, this this collecting of comic books or other materials like this so... unifying in a way.
Yep.
Proponent. That's what I meant to say. Proponent of the hunt.
I'm a big proponent of the hunt. The hunt is, well, the hunt is what my wife and I did for the first 2 years of our relationship.
Yep.
You know, she joined me on my hunts when I was looking for comics or toys and stuff.
She's a keeper.
I know, right?
Yeah, that was a fun thing. You get together. It's a social event. You go out and you look for stuff and you go, oh my God, I can't believe they have this issue or whatever.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, let me go to Amazon and get it shipped
to me.
Well,
at the same time, I agree with you, and I love, you know, we always go looking for stuff, and I love that. But sometimes obscure series, I mean, I was searching for years, never could find the issues I was missing. And that's why some of these online sellers are just terrific, you know.
That's true, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I know what you mean. You do both. You like to do both. One thing, if you don't mind, I want to go back to this novel you're reading. How did you find out? You mentioned, but I wasn't paying attention. Sorry. How did you find out about the novel?
It was actually suggested to me by Amazon. As I was downloading different free comic book, because when you get a Kindle, you get like a free 30 days of Amazon, you know, blah, 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 and you get all this crap. I mean, you can get tons of stuff for free.
Right.
Books, music, movies, TV. You can get all this stuff for free for like 30 days.
Yeah.
So downloading different comics, graphic novels, and everything, it popped up as, hey, we highly suggest this book to you. So I looked at it, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I kept going, looking at different stuff, and it just kept popping up over and over and over again. So I was like, all right, well, let's give this a try. And like I said, fantastic book. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the book. So
yeah, I mean, that's a good thing about, I mean, the good and the bad thing about those things, what do they call them? That they know what you're looking at.
The suggested read.
Algorithms.
Yeah, that's the good and the bad of it. You know, just like everything else we talk about, everything's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, but at the same time, algorithms that can be good, but sometimes you may like one thing in that area, but you don't care. You know, everybody can be put into boxes so easily.
No.
Well, that's like the algorithms for Spotify are absolutely horrific. You know, I mean, I listen to mostly electronic music. I do like rap. I do like, you know, pop music. I have a variety of musical tastes. I listened to Tupac for a day on Spotify, and now it gives me nothing but ads about current modern rap music, which, I'm sorry, I can't stand modern rap music. Rap to me was like, you know, Wu-Tang Clan, Biggie, Tupac, you know, this is, whatever this is they're doing now, it's not rap music, but that's a whole other subject.
Well, see, that's right. It's like all those comedians when TiVo came out, and they started talking about how much they love TiVo, but then TiVo thought they were gay because, you know, all the stuff that they liked, it's, oh, you must like this, you know, it's...
Yeah, you know. All I know is that, like, everything has, like, its use. Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. It has its use. But right now we're going to use a break, actually. So,
bye.
Hold on.
Stop it. You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
And that was Sonic Graffiti. They're a local band somewhere in South Florida, but they may be touring in a town near you, so check them out on the blog. Anyway, all right, going back, one question I want to ask, Rook, again, about that book you're reading. Have you read any other types of books like that, prose books about, you know, super-powered people, like comic book type stuff?
Novels. I'm trying to think.
Do you remember those old Marvel novels?
That's what I was wanting to go to. Now, I don't know if you... In 1976, I found the first comic store I ever saw. And to me, it was just like, you know, I was an addict and I walked into the police where they catch everything. I was so excited. They had it was the first time I ever saw the collected Frazetta, those Ballantine books.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
And I'm like, oh, my God, my friend and I were both freaking out. All the comics you could get were all there. They had underground comics. They had, you know, alternative comics. It's just, I never seen like it. And the owner was saying, "Oh, we also got the Spider-Man book by Jerry Conway." And I'm like, "What? I like Jerry Conway." And it was just a prose book, a little paperback book. Dave Cockrum or Joe Sinnott
painted the cover. John, you ever seen any of those? Probably have.
No, I've seen stuff like this, like Choose Your Own Adventure style books.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember, like, back in the 80s, like, Nintendo had novelized versions of some of their most popular video games, like Bionic Commando. I'm going to go dumb on what the other one was. Metal Gear was a real popular one. But I remember some of those. I don't remember particularly like comic book style ones, though.
Yeah, it was like, I think I have one somewhere. It was that the X-Men would have a painted cover, and it was either written by Jerry Conway. I thought one was written by Stan Lee. I don't even know, or somebody.
His name was on everything.
Yeah, that's right.
Marv Wolfman wrote one. There was Spider-Man.
Did you read them, by the way?
Oh. Well, there was a Spider-Man, and there was a Captain America. Those, of course, were always the first couple. They had a painted cover, but they were by Marvel artists like John Romita, Dave Cockrum.
Yeah.
Well, Cockrum did some. And they were written, I know Marv Wolfman wrote one. I think Jerry Conway wrote one. I think Roy Thomas might have written one. But here was my feeling on this. When the comic guy was telling me this, I thought, I'm in a store full of comics that I like. I like comic characters. Why in the world do I want to read a prose novel about comic characters and by a comic book writer? And when I say that, I don't mean to slight those guys. I'm the complete opposite of Rook. I bought the comics. I like the stories, but I bought the comics for the art. And the reason I'm bringing this up was I just heard Marty Pascal, you know, a 70s writer who continues to write. He was on Word Balloon, a really good comic podcast that everybody should be listening to. Marty Pascal was always a good writer, and he's written a lot for television. You know, he's written shows we all watch, like I think he worked for G.I. Joe, but he wrote some episodes of Batman animated series, which I loved, and they were great. And he's worked for other television shows and stuff. He's, you know, written comics. But besides being a good writer, he's really interesting to listen to. He's funny. He's an historian. He loves old radio. I mean, he's just... I would listen to podcasts of Marty Pascal just ranting all day if I could. And they hired him to write the Daredevil novel, which I've never read any of these, but he said he didn't use his name. He had a pen name for it. And there was a couple of reasons. One, he wasn't a Marvel writer, and somebody at Marvel didn't feel comfortable with a DC writer writing one of their books. And I think the other reason was, I think part of it was him too. But he said he was really proud of that novel because after he finished it, he said he was kind of proud of it, was wishing he had his name on it. And he described it, and he said that basically what he was talking about was how Matt Murdock saw the world. You know, he was blind and went through the radar senses. You know, later Frank Miller kind of touched upon that somewhat, but Marty Pascal was writing it as a prose and, you know, carried on about it. And I guess it's never been back in print. I guess it's hard to find, but some newspaper gave a big review on it, talking about it. And I thought, well, maybe I missed the boat on it. Because to me, I want to say this, I don't mean to be a jerk, but, you know, 14-year-old me thought, why would I want to... I never read the books for the writers except Chris Claremont. And later Alan Moore. I always read it for the artist.
Sure.
And when Rook was talking about it, it's the first thing I thought about. But you absolutely love that book. You know, that's that book you just read.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here's an interesting thing. As you're talking about these prose novels, I did a little research. They're still quite a popular thing.
Huh.
Captain America Dark Design, Kraven's Last Hunt... I mean, these are very new stories that are still being turned into prose novels. So, yeah, they're still out there. Kindle editions, paperback editions. So, yeah, that's still something. I'm surprised I haven't seen more of those over the years.
You know, like I said, they were everywhere. Comic stores that have them. You see them in the discount stores, you know, like you would know. They were everywhere. I had I never had those. They also did paperback books, the reprints, like my favorite was the Fantastic
Four.
Yeah,
the other day. Yeah,
and they were in color. You know, the
but
Marvel.
The pages were tiny.
Yeah, but they had the first four or five issues of the Fantastic Four in color in a paperback.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And I think Joe Sinnott did the cover. They were just absolutely beautiful.
I have a Conan one, and there was a Captain America one that was the burned. The one that that artist, that the vampire guy. Remember. It was Baron something or other, Captain America.
Baron Zemo?
Baron Blood.
Baron Blood, something like that. It was a vampire guy or whatever. And that guy wrote a comic book about it. I think I think Jack Staff was influenced by it. They had all that stuff back then. You know, that was like the first, you know, Marvel Masterworks or whatever.
Yeah, there was. And that was, like I said, that was my opportunity to read those old Fantastic Four books. I wish I had it because that was... that was a precious thing. I was moving around a lot at the time, and I just thought, and like I said, the pages were in color.
Well, we talked about this before, but back then, you would get, like, Marvel would be the Fantastic Four started in 63. By 1967 or 8, you're already getting Marvel Collector's Item masterpieces, and they would be reprinting the early Fantastic Fours. It was only 4 or 5 years later, but they were already, like, collector's items, and as a kid... You go, oh, yeah, these are old because you're only like 10 years old. That was half your life ago.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, to a kid, yeah, that is ancient.
Yeah, it is ancient.
But when you think about it now, these are only like 4 years old. What's the deal? But, yeah, you know, you got to be relative to your age or whatever. You know,
there was one book that I would recommend I did read, but it wasn't based on, like, the Marvel characters. And it was... The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon.
Oh, yeah.
I got that book, and it was basically, it was about two cousins that created a character called the Escapist. And it told the whole story. One of them worked at a novelty company, and then he got his cousin hired there. The Golem tied into it, you know, from, you know, Europe. And when I say that, they basically, the novelty company found out about comics because of the two cousins, and they created the Escapist and got it to be big. And it kind of told the story of Siegel and Schuster and Superman, even though they are in the story. And he intertwines it. He's got Will Eisner, he's got Stan Lee, he's got Jack Kirby. They all, and they talk about the other comics. And World War II comes in, you know, they go to war, and one of them does. But I thought, man, that's one of the greatest. And then I guess Dark Horse did a 6-issue series, and Will Eisner did a story for it. I've never read the comics from it, but the book was fantastic. So that was a prose novel, but the guy, like in this one, he created his own character.
Well, here's something that I'm thinking about those. When you mentioned those old Marvel novels, of course, I'm like, you know, going off on a tangent or whatever. We've never read any of them. I've seen them. I never bought them. I remember... Because I never, again, novelizations of movies. You remember, like, they used to have novelizations of old movies, like B movies or whatever. I never knew this, but years later I found out that some of these novelizations were racy. They had nothing much to do with the movies, but they were kind of like racy.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering now
if these Marvel novels,
something's going on in them, like bad language or
things
are happening in them, you know, and you're going like, well, you know.
I doubt it.
But you can always imagine.
I'm trying to think, because I remember, like, well, I mean, they were geared towards kids, so, you know.
Well, with the black and white magazines Marvel was doing in the 70s. Yeah, and they were pushing, but they weren't really adult stories, but they'd kind of show some nudity. It's like they knew they could get away with it.
Yeah.
It was still the same stories you could read in the color comics, but they would show, and when I say nudity, it wasn't full, but it was more titillating. And I remember my...
So to speak.
My 9-year-old cousin got one. He was some woman swimming underwater. And
it was a swamp thing, a man thing probably, or something.
Probably, and it didn't show anything, but he's like, hey, look at this. You know, and there
yeah,
was
the first,
a...
Remember the first issue of Savage Tales? I mean, remember getting that, and it was like, I think there was a Man-Thing story drawn by Gray Morrow, and there was a woman with like a see-through nightie. I was like, whoa!
Yeah. My cousin, one of my cousins who was my age, had an issue of Kazar. I don't know if it was Savage Tales or it was just Kazar.
Yeah, it was Savage Tales, yeah.
But I love that one, but at one point, there was a woman down in the Savage Land, and she was trying to get his attention. And she made him grab her, and then she ripped away and ripped her shirt off. And I'm, what? And the Kazar explained, you're trying to titillate me. And then he gestures over this waterfall, and there's three women in a waterfall naked. Of course,
yeah.
You know, John Buscema drew all the water over them. But when you're 12, wow, you know.
Well, didn't Conan have some, like, water nymphs or something? I seem to remember in one of those books.
Oh, yeah,
like,
I'm sure.
And he was always, like, with wenches or whatever.
But they,
you know,
they were supposed to read stories that adults would like, but they were just, you know... comic porn.
Well, I remember, like, when I was a kid, I'm going to the drugstore to buy comics, and I look in the newsstands, and this is, like, of course, old-timer stuff. I see Vampirella number one. And I'm like, oh, man, it's number one. And my dad gives me, like, a quarter or something like that. I go, Dad, can you give me 50 cents? I go, yeah, sure, you know. So I take it up, and, you know, she's there for Zeta. She's wearing a little skimpy outfit. Yeah. The guy sells it to me, no problem, you know. So I bring it in the car, and I'm looking at it, and my dad goes... What did you buy?
Yeah. it's funny because I remember as a kid,
he was cool with it.
I was reading The Crow,
yeah,
and of course The Crow was considered an adult comic.
Yeah, it was violent.
And I had read, like, I don't know, like two or three or four, several issues of it, right? And a particular comic book shop didn't have it, so I went. And we found this shop near my house that had it. Well, the guy wouldn't sell it to me.
Oh,
I was furious. I was like, what do you mean? Why can't I buy it? And what he basically said is, you know, you have to have an adult with you. This is, you know. So I simply walk out to the car, get my mom, and my mom walks in. And she was so aggravated by it. She was just like, it's just a comic book.
Exactly. It's not going to do it. It's not going to hurt him or anything like that. It's just a comic book.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, there was that... I don't know if it happened around the time. Remember Friendly Franks or whatever?
Yeah.
There was a comic shop that sold something to somebody or whatever, and they got busted.
That was here in Florida, wasn't it?
I don't remember where it was.
You
can retell the story better than
I
can.
Well, Friendly Franks, maybe it was in Illinois. That was major. And it was always in the Comics Journal, but... He had a store, and he had the everything marked properly. You know, the adult comics were, you know, behind the counter, or it was blockaded so not everybody could go to, and it was clearly marked. And somebody bought a comic, and next thing you know, the police went in and busted him. And then one of the police was carrying on because he had a Wonder Woman poster up on the wall, and he said, that's pornography, you know. Cause
oh,
sometimes,
my God, really?
And he went to jail. And that's when the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund came out. They created that because of Friendly Franks.
Yeah.
And then, for some reason, I want to say that was... Something happened in Florida. It also happened in Oklahoma City. There was another store that got hit in Oklahoma City. And, you know, this is... It was always religious things going on and stuff. And then down here in our area, there was a cartoonist. I think his last name was Diana. He did a... Death Angel or something.
I think I remember that, yeah.
And it was in the paper, and they talked about it, and he just published his own comic, and he got busted for obscenity, and I think they were going to put him in jail. I don't really know what happened quite.
It all sounds real vaguely familiar.
It was happening all over the place, and I do know in 87 They were talking in comic magazines, like the Archie Comics guys were saying that they don't like to see what, you know, comics are doing with, you know, Dark Knight and Watchmen and some of this stuff. It says, Jerry Falwell held up an issue of Dark Knight at the pulpit on television and was carrying on about it. And I remember Frank Miller and these guys were talking about it, that they were starting to go after him. And then Jim Baker got busted, and then Jerry Falwell got busted, right? And they all went after each other's throats, and that was the end of it. The Archie Comics guys are saying they've already lived through one witch hunt.
The 50s one.
You know, the Wortham stuff.
Well, it's really interesting. They did not abolish the comics code till like 2001. Even though the books didn't carry it, there was still a comic book code, because I read about it on Wikipedia, because I found something out that was interesting from my blog. Some guy wrote about, you know, a book that I posted, a Dell book or whatever, and he said, well, you know, blah, 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 the old Comics Code Authority. You know, the Dell Comics, and I think Dell, Whitman, I forgot which one, they never carried the Comics Code Authority.
I never really, you're right, they didn't have it.
They never carried it, even though, because their whole brand was these Dell Comics or good comics or whatever. I don't know if they were above it, or they didn't want, but they never had a problem with distribution. Supposedly, if you didn't carry the Comics Code, the distributors wouldn't carry you, but Dell and those guys were fine with it.
They were the biggest comic publisher around.
Yeah, I guess that back then were they bigger than DC Comics were back in the 60s?
They sold more comics than any other comic company of the time.
So they were the big boys, so they could get away with it. I never ever noticed it, but they did not carry the Comics Code Authority. I looked through five or six of them that I had.
But Gold Key did. They had the Comics Code
Authority. Gold Key did, but not Dell. Okay, because then Dell became Whitman and Gold Key or whatever.
Well, Dell split off, and they became Gold Key, but somehow Gold Key was still owned by Whitman.
It's online.
But the Comics Code was kind of vanishing, and then, they weren't really much, and I think they're on their last leg. And then it was in the 90s when Frank Miller was doing Sin City and, you know, the whole Legends and Dark Horse. And then
it's so funny to hear you guys talk about the Comics Code, because I don't remember any of it.
You remember the stamp?
When we first talked about it on the show, I went back to old issues of mine and I saw it and I realized, it's there. And I just never realized what it was about, what it was for.
It was from the 50s.
Well, it was the Wortham hearings that they were doing after he wrote
that. And that wasn't religious either. That was a psychiatrist.
Yeah, he was a psychiatrist.
That said that these comics are like...
But there were certain things.
Juvenile delinquency.
You couldn't have zombies. You couldn't show killing.
You couldn't use the word werewolf or ghoul or zombie or anything.
You couldn't show
like
nudity.
That.
I mean, there were certain things. And I remember there was a guy that had a store in Oklahoma City that had sold those little metal figures for gaming and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was a Vietnam vet. And he and I were talking. And somehow something about the X-Men came up. Of course, it's the same thing he said to him the original X-Men were. And he liked Silver Age comics. He didn't read on like I did. And when I was telling about Wolverine killing that guy in the Savage Land off camera, the guy was, they're killing people in comics again? He was shocked. And I thought, yeah. I mean, not blatantly, but the Punisher was shooting people up.
Sure.
I mean, it was still under the Comics Code, but they lost power. And you always talked about the 70s. That's when the comics, Werewolf by Night, Frankenstein, Tomb of Dracula was coming out. Well, something happened, and the Comics Code Authority was relaxing things.
What was the key? One of the key moments was the Spider-Man drug issue.
Yes.
Marvel said, what do you mean we can't publish it? It's issue 118 or one something like that. It was an issue, a drug-related issue. There was like a drug thing going on with Harry Osborn, I think, or somebody like that.
Now, see, that's something that confused me. Because
Marvel printed it without the Comics Code Authority and
got away
with
it. Yeah, it was two issues.
Wow, really?
Because what happened... When I was a kid at 9, and I've said this in the show before if people want to turn it off, but there was a Green Lantern, Green Arrow issue, which is really famous, and is where Speedy is shooting up.
Yeah, the cover.
They have they have Speedy, and it has Green Lantern, Green Arrow behind it, and then, you know, Green Arrow screaming, my ward is a junkie. But it has Speedy in his costume, you know, with the heroin needle and all that, and I was shocked. I bought it. My dad wasn't real thrilled. He was kind of... But it was major, and the second issue had a big syringe with, you know, Green Arrow carrying Speedy away, and then Green Lantern's like, you know, has his arms up, his rage, and that won some kind of big award at the time. And I thought that was the first. Well, in college, my buddy Britt was talking about the Spider-Man drug issue. And what happened was Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams wanted to do their drug issue, had it ready, and DC wouldn't let them print it because of the comics code. Well, Stan Lee went ahead and did one about pills. Now, the DC one, they researched. You know, they were going to, you know, centers and stuff, and, you know, I guess Denny O'Neil was involved in it. So they were basing theirs on reality. Well, Stan Lee just basically wrote a comic story, had the pills in it. There was no research. It was just kind of comic book ideas. And the comics code wouldn't allow it, so Stan Lee just went ahead and printed it without the comics code on it. I think it was two issues. I know there was one issue. Yeah. Okay.
Now, I'd be interested to find out, like, what years these were published. These
71.
Different 70, and 70, what,
71.
Does anybody know what year the Iron Man Demon in the Bottle storyline
was?
Yeah,
that was 84. That was 83
okay,
and 84.
So that was much later.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
that was later on.
But that's when you could basically do... That's when the comics code was still around, but they...
They get their fangs, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of like, okay, you just stay over there and we'll put the seal on it, you know. When DC, I guess Neil Adams, from what I understand, Neil Adams brought it up again, and they said we can't because of the comics code, and they said, well, Marvel did it. What? Yeah, Stan Lee did Spider-Man. What happened? Nothing. Really? So then DC was all behind it, and they put it out. So, I mean, Stan Lee, he wasn't afraid. I respect that.
No, I mean...
And that's, I think you're right. I think that's when it started changing, and they didn't really treat the Comics Code Authority with as much seriousness as they used to.
Yeah, and the books, I think at that point, the books started being written by older people, too, you know what I mean? It wasn't just for
still by kids,
well,
though.
And I'm curious to see, I'm going to have to go back through my collection and take a look, because, of course, Ghost Rider, the original Ghost Rider, was very active in the 70s. Yeah. And I mean, you know, the Son of Satan, you know, all the. Yeah, I mean, there was all this stuff happening in those issues.
Frankenstein, I mean, Werewolf by Night.
Well, that's what we're talking about. That's when the because you couldn't have anything from hell. So Ghost Rider wouldn't have happened. But like I said, Tomb of Dracula, Werewolf by Night, those all came out, and then Ghost Rider came out.
Okay.
That's all right after.
The Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider,
not the original. Yeah, not the original White Horse, you know.
Yeah, the guy from the 50s or whatever. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that happened. Like I said, back to the Comics Code, Frank Miller was writing about this in Sin City, that what happened was somehow the Comics Code made a deal with Walmart, because Walmart was carrying comics for a while, which was kind of nice. But they said Walmart wouldn't carry it unless it had the Comics Code Authority on it. And Frank Miller said,
ridiculous.
Well, you won't get mine at Walmart because I will never have it. And he was upset at DC and Marvel for jumping in the bed with him again. And that didn't last real long because Walmart didn't carry the comics for real long.
It just lasts. It's just a fad.
And then they went away. But like I said, that was the thing was you can't carry a comic unless it has the comics code. Because like I said, big retailers like Marvel and, I mean, not Marvel, Walmart and stuff. If you can convince them not to carry it, then you're dead in the water. So, yeah, that was the last leg, and then it was gone. But I'd see articles about it that they had all these women working for the Comics Code. They would read the comics. It was like a bunch of old school moms or something, you know. And
oh, look at this.
Let's get a group of people who will get offended by anything them be the authority.
Well, the original, it was when Gaines... William Gaines, the one that did all the EC books that Al loves so much, he was saying, why don't we, you know, have psychiatrists look at this stuff and see if it really is harmful for kids. If it is, I'll stop publishing it voluntarily. And they didn't want to do it. And it's when DC, I don't know, there was another company, but it was DC and somebody else. Maybe Archie.
Fawcett, I don't know.
I don't think it was Fawcett, but DC was behind it, and there was another comic company. And they were the two that said, wait a minute, let's create this one. And basically what they created, Gaines couldn't compete with. He said, I'm dead in the water on this one. And it was kind of cowardice, and that's what we were under for a long time. So, to me, the Comics Code was something there when I was a kid. I didn't really know all the history of it later. But a lot of the stuff, if you want to know about it, there's a really good book called Men of Tomorrow. And it talks all about the origins of the comic industry, how it started with the whole, you know, what's it called, Donnelly. It tells the whole how Donnelly was the guy that had DC, you know, had National and American.
Oh yeah, the guy on the DC.
And Major Wheeler Nicholson that did Detective Comics, and then it goes on and talks all about Martin Goodman and everything, and it tells this whole story. It's a fantastic book, and I've got it if you ever want to read it. I offered it to Al, and he just laughed at me while he twirled his mustache.
I did read well, my hand wall mustache, as long as I have it. I did read the other one, the Marvel book.
Untold Story.
That's a good book, too. The Untold Story.
You wanted to read it, and I forgot all about
that's
that.
That's a good
I'll
book
bring
to
it
read.
To you.
Yeah.
Dallas and Al and I all read it.
Yeah, that's a good one to read. I just wanted to say something, though, about we're getting back to, like, Green Lantern and Speedy and the drug issues or whatever. With a name like Speedy, you think he'd be doing amphetamine.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Yeah,
instead of, you know.
Yeah, the other man, I don't know.
Well, maybe he needs to calm down a little bit.
Yeah, maybe
he
was
so
like,
speedy.
I'll tell you, I was 9. No, I was 10 when that came out. I was at a TGNY in Oklahoma City, and what? It was like everything disappeared except that comic on the rack. And I read it, and I don't know. I was 10. It just got my attention, and the story was fine, but what I was more interested in was the Gil Kane, John Room story, Green Lantern story in the back, the reprint. I enjoyed that a lot more. But it was staggering to see these characters. They were always so squeaky clean and stuff, and all of a sudden Speedy talked about, in the story, Green Lantern, Green Arrow stopped a kid that Speedy knew that was on drugs.
Yeah.
And then they said, why would kids do that? And then Speedy was explaining why. You know, sometimes they come from broken homes or their parents, you know, and just whatever. And then at the very end of that first issue, that's when they walk in and Speedy's shooting up. And, you know, Green Arrow's freaking out. And then Speedy said, who do you think I was talking about? You know, that was powerful. When you're 10, even though you didn't like the story, that was powerful.
Well, those Green Lanterns, there was a whole series. They became relevant comics. There was one about racism, where it was a cover. It was like Green Lantern and a black guy there, and the guy goes, "You know, you all you do is care about the green skins, the blue skins, but you don't care about the black skins." And then there was another issue. I remember the cover had a Jesus-looking guy that was crucified on an airplane, like on a jet plane. They were pushing the envelope, and that was like in the late 60s or 70s.
Well, comic books have always been able to do that, though. Comic books have always been a voice for you know, change, a voice, you know, something to kind of say, hey, you know, this isn't right.
They reflect the times. You
know? John Stewart became Green Lantern in those issues, too. That's where John Stewart showed up.
And then he had the Daily Show after that.
Well, that's a different John Stewart. But the John Stewart a Green Lantern all the time now, that's where he came from. Those were greatness, and I remember reading them as a kid, and I was always kind of shocked. At the same time, I was getting tired of it, because, you know, I wanted the excitement. I wanted the fantastic. But it made you think, and these are the things we're surrounded by, but you and I have talked about it before. Do you ever really go back and read those old stories?
No.
They don't stand up today. I mean,
they're
very
really
topical.
And
when I say that, Denny O'Neill's greatness, Neil Adams is far beyond greatness, but it's worth looking at. I'm not, if somebody may be interested, don't turn away from it, but it's like the impact in the 70s was major, and you read them now, and it's just, it's not quite the same.
You have to look at it in a historical perspective, more so than, for what it did. It's like when you listen to, like, some old record or something like that, you look at it for the historical perspective, and not like, well, you know, these guys are, like, you know, sorry compared to, you know, this other band.
I don't know. There's some things that stand up over
Black
the test
Sabbath.
Of time.
Yes.
Well, yeah, Black Sabbath, exactly.
Yeah, you know, but the majority of it doesn't, you know. Well, a good chunk of it doesn't, but for the time, you know, it was impressive. So, anyway.
I guess we're about to go. One thing I wanted to bring up was on the Facebook group, one of our listeners, Dallas, mentioned Roddy Frey. He's been doing
He mentioned that last episode. Yeah. I'm loving it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, wanted to go give a shout-out. Those are fantastic. And, I mean, it's just the images he's choosing to go with those, and how he puts them in are flawless. We've really enjoyed those. And every once in a while, he pops up a couple more. And mad skills, dude. You know,
What's that? What's that other website that I found that I sent you to? There's a website called DC Super Team Family, and all the guy does is like he just does mashup covers.
Yeah,
but the dude's like a Photoshop wizard, and he had one with Bowie and Labyrinth and all this stuff, and I was like,
yeah, and he always has crossovers with like DC.
He always has crossovers
with
DCs and Marvels, and they're flawless, you know. Yeah. And you're like, man, I wish some of these covers really should come true one day, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, it's hard to.
That's another good one, too. There's a lot of guys doing that stuff.
It's easy to put stuff in Photoshop or whatever you use on top of each other, but it's hard to make it where they look alike.
Well, and there's the one guy that goes thrift store hunting and buys old paintings and, like, paints Star Wars and other things into it.
Oh, no.
It's like those landscape paintings, you know, the cheap ones you get at Goodwill.
Yeah, the really cheap crap that everybody had back when
Godzilla and stuff on.
Yeah, this guy turns them back.
Yeah, that's been...
And then he does. He turns them like back into thrift stores and stuff.
You never seen that?
I got to see that.
Oh, that's great. Anyway, but Roddy Frey, thank you very much for sharing your stuff on our group. I appreciate it. I think everybody enjoys those.
Absolutely, I'm loving it.
Anyway, anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. It's good to have you back, man.
Oh,
I'm happy to be back. I miss Dallas, you know, but you know this is great having you guys here.
Oh yeah, absolutely, it's good. Anything, Mr. Al?
No, I'm done for now anyway. I'll have more to say later.
And Al mentioned his blog. It's on the sidebar of our blog, but it's Destination Nightmare. It's fantastic. A lot of people go to it, and I really enjoy it myself.
I do, too. Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's our blog. Oh, you put it together.
It's mine.
It's mine. I like it, too.
And if you listen to the show, if you get a chance, if you could give us an iTunes review, it really helps us out in the rankings, and we'd appreciate it. And in the meantime,
read more comics.
You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!